we're going to try to continue and maybe even finish this essay analyzing the machlokas, the fundamentals of the controversy between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon regarding muktzah. And if you recall, we started this essay yesterday. We got up to the last paragraph on Kuf Nun Zayin. And that's where we're up to, and that's where we want to begin today. The basic thesis here, if you recall, is that whereas Rabbi Yehuda requires an active hachana before Shabbos, and that's based on the pasuk apparently Vehechinu Eis Asher Yaviu, Rabbi Shimon says that we don't need what's called hachana sagavra, but rather we need that the cheftza be muchan mitzad atzmo. That means that the object itself is roi lachila, it's edible. Again, he has maybe placed it out of his mind temporarily on Erev Shabbos, but he still has somewhere down deep in his subconscious mind the possibility that this cheftza, since it's muchan mitzad atzmo, might be usable. And the only exception to that rule is going to be what we call Maisa Haktza Chiyuvi, which means that the Cheftza has the authority, so to speak, and the ability to be Mechid itself and define itself as Mukhan, but only up to a certain point beyond which the Cheftza has no authority. And that is, we have to have the Haskama, we have to have the tacit agreement of the person who owns that object. If he has decided that no way, no how is he going to use this, there's no what we call Yoshev Umitzape. He doesn't have any hope or any anticipation to ever be able to use this object. And he put it in a place where he knows that unless some radical change happens, a typhoon comes, he's not going to be able to enjoy it. In such a case, even Rav Shimon holds that the Gavra's Mafkia, he removes the possibility of the Cheftza being Mechines Atzma. And that's the sugi that we learned on Daf Mem Dalid called Kos Kara Vashishis. That in the case of a Ner Zuta, of a classical Ner that has X amount, a limited amount of Shemen in it, there he's Yoshev Mitzape, and since the Cheftza Mitzad Atzma is Roy, the Shemen itself could be used, therefore it's Mechines Atzmo. That's called the Hachana that's built in, that's inherent in the object itself. But if he takes the object and he puts it away completely, he lights Shemen that will last apparently for the entire Shabbos, that's called Kos V'Kara V'Shishis, then if he's Mafkia, the Cheft itself, he does what's called a Haktsah, he excludes Chiyuvi in a positive way the object from Shabbos, then there's no possibility for the Cheft itself to be Mechines Atzma. In the case of Tamrei De'iska, there again, the Cheft itself is Roy Lachiva. The dates are edible. And quite obviously, if he needs them because he has no dates to serve his guests on the table, that's what he'll do. He'll dig into his otzar, you know, to his storage place, and he'll unwrap those dates that were wrapped for export, and therefore the cheftz is omed. But in a case of a haktzah v'yodayim, where he completely excludes this object for the entire Shabbos, in that case, even Rav Shimon agrees that there's no way that the cheftzah could be mechines atzmo. And therefore, for example, the Gemara suggests that in the case of Grogros Vitzimukim, again, we're assuming right now, again, we may change our mind, but right now we're assuming that according to the Sfasemis at least, in the case of Grogros Vitzimukim, that he placed it up on his roof, even if at some point those Grogros Vitzimukim become Yveshos, they become dry enough so that they're perfectly edible, it still remains muktzah because there was no possibility of hachana in the case of haktzah midah, so maisa haktzah mitzad agavra that makes it impossible for the cheftza to be mechin es atzmo. Obviously, we're going to have to flesh this out because we're still stuck with the following issue. In the case of ner shadolak, as soon as the ner is extinguished, Rabbi Shimon holds he's allowed to enjoy the benefit of the Ner. It means that there was a hachana al shema asid. And here's what David said as far yesterday, that maybe in the case of Grogus Vitzimukim, under normal circumstances, you know, the sun reaches a certain level of heat at its zenith, but it's not going to dry up and make these figs and grapes, raisins in this case, edible during the course of Shabbos. So he's not a Yoshev who mitzapeh. Whereas in the case of Ner, since we're talking about a Ner Zuta, there we have Yoshev mitzapeh.
But if you had a heat wave, like, you know, you didn't
correct.
Look at the weather report, there was a heat wave, and suddenly they are ready.
So again, that
is it like the...
So that becomes, wait a minute, did he know about the heat wave? In other words, now we get into a whole other issue.
Right.
What if there were circumstances that he was unaware of that would remove Mukta? Are those circumstances objective enough to remove Mukta? Do we need that subjective element that he's aware of those circumstances? From the perspective of Rav Soloveitchik, that Rav Shimon is putting all his eggs into the basket of the Chefza being making his Atzmo, then it's quite possible that even if he's not aware of the fact that there's, you know, there's a heat wave and therefore the raisins will certainly be dried up before the end of Shabbos and they'll be suitable and edible, that could enough guarantee and supply the Chefza with the ability to be making his Atzmo. Possibly. I don't know. A very interesting question. The Chazon Ish has a discussion about this. What happens if a person doesn't realize that it's not Muktzah? He thinks it is Muktzah, but he finds out on Shabbos that the circumstances are such that it's not Muktzah. So now he quotes a sugya on Daf Kuf Nun Zayin. Now here,
in their rot situations and the drying out figs and grapes,
right.
and compare them, like. Normally, these grapes and dates won't be ready. So if they were ready, you can't eat them. Just like a big bowl, your big 7-day candle.
Right. That, somebody called them, but I couldn't answer.
Normally, that wouldn't be available to you. So if it blows out by accident, just like if there was a heat wave, then right. You still can't use that. But
that would be like kosher hashishus.
Right. But if there was the small candle and or the heat wave that you know is coming, then right. Those two cases would be parallel.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, now he has a sugya at the end of Masechta Shabbos. And this is the sugya of what's called Muktzah Machmas Isur. If you recall, we established that there are certain categories of Muktzah that Rabbi Shimon in fact accepts, one of which is called Muktzah Machmas Isur. So when he lights the candle on Erev Shabbos, and he's enjoined from taking the shemen because of Aleches Kibui, that's called Muktzah Machmas Isur. Even Rav Shimon agrees that Kol Zman, as long as the candle is lit, it's Muktzah. And the Gemara says that in this context, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara establishes that as a general rule, we paskin like Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon's sheet of Lesley Muktzah. And that'll help us with Tamar de Iska. That'll help us with cases like Chitin, Shazarim Bakarka. Possibly would help us with Ephrochim that jumped on the basket, then jumped out of the basket, and perhaps a host of other cases.
The coins on the bed. The
coins on the bed that were removed in the middle of Shabbos. However, with the case of Ner Doleg, there we paskin, like Rabbi Yehuda, that even after the Ner is kabui, it still remains Muktzah. In other words, the principle of Migu kicks in, that since it was Muktzah, even according to Rav Shimon, entering into Shabbos, even though the cause for Muktzah was removed, because now the Ner is no longer lit, it remains Muktzah. Yesh la'ayin, ma'ishna b'ha d'lo kaimalon k'Rav Shimon. Why is it that in this particular detail, we reject the sheet of Rav Shimon? And he wants to suggest the following, that when something becomes asur on Shabbos because of a malach of Shabbos, like for example the ner, the shemen shem ner, because of malach es machabeh, something changes in the object itself. there's a transformation of the object to such an extent that we could call it a haktsah chiyuvus, meaning the sheet of Rav Shimon that we accept is that the chefetz could be making this atzma. But once there's a transformation in the object changes its personality and it becomes a chefetz di isura, then we have a haktsah chiyuvus. So here I want you to take a look at the last line on Kuf Nun Zayin, going on to the top of Kuf Nun Ches. He says the following, Yesh kan chalos din mukta behachefta. He wants to say that in general we paskin like Rav Shimon, and you might talk about the absence of hachana in certain cases, but we never talk about a mukta in the object, that the object becomes mukta in itself. What's the significance of transforming the object into a chefta de mukta? And he says, and here we turn to the next page, Mafkia mimenu shem shel muchan. The category of mukta is antithetical to the category of muchan. You can't have both. They're mutually exclusive. And therefore, you cannot say that, you know what, there was a hachan of this chefza for the future, for the time period after which the candle is extinguished. You can't do that. Why? Because the object itself is completely mufka, it's excluded, it's completely excluded from hachana. Why? Because it's mukta. Davar shechaser hachana, if you want to talk about something that's lacking in hachana, for example, you could talk about grogros vitzi mukim, that once he puts it up on the roof, it's lacking hachana. And you might even say, as the Habin Reish Lakish, remember that chitim, once you plant it in the ground, there's an absence of achana. There we can accept Rabbi Shimon, and we can say, you know what, the cheft is still roi, and therefore it's making its atzma, because it's suitable and it's fit for eating. But here, in the case of Isur, we're dealing with a whole different kind of obstruction to hachana, a whole different anti-hachana. It's not just that he put it out of his mind and therefore we're lacking in hachana. It's not just the absence of hachana, but there's a positive state of being which is called isur, which generates mukta, and the shame mukta, meaning the identity of the object is mukta, is antithetical to the shame hachana when you want to prepare something for Shabbos. And here we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that when there's a haktsa in the chefta, then we have to accept mukta, and we have to accept migudis katsoi, because the opposite of migudis katsoi is to say that, well, there is a hachon on Erev Shabbos for the future, but you can't do so in the case of mukta. What do I mean in the case of mukta? Mukta as opposed to the absence of hachon. So on both sides, this is fascinating, because we are now coming into a fundamental analogy, or I should say not analogy, analysis, which splits our logic, you know, the rational mind, between something that's absent, you know, you're missing an element, and something that has a positive-negative aspect. What do I mean by positive? The negativity exists. You know, sometimes you just don't have the positive. You're lacking in achana. So if you're lacking in achana, okay, you didn't prepare it because you put it out of your mind, but the object itself fills in that achana. But in other cases, we have a positive generation of mukta. You generate a shame mukta. And that's what happens in the case of mukta machmas isur. And that's what he says at the end of this paragraph, b'chai gavna, in such a case, ha-cheftza nase mufka me'achana. The shame mukta is antithetical to achana, and it prevents any possibility of hachana, and therefore we cannot accept Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon has this very expansive and all-inclusive application of hachana, and he's saying that the chefetz is roi, or it will become roi. So that's a built-in hachana. Yeah. That's Rabbi Shimon. But we cannot accept Rabbi Shimon in the case where there's a positive Shem Muktzah. And that's what happens when the Isur sets in, and that's the unique nature of the category called Muktzah Machmas Isur. So let's make a mental note of this breakthrough, and we'll have to come back to it when we get to the sugya Muktzah Machmas Isur. And now we're up to Os Gimel. Here, we're moving on to a whole new discussion. Until now, we've been discussing what's called Ochlin. Under what circumstances are these dates mukhan or mukta, the chitin, the beitza, can I eat it? We're going to have a case of an animal that's a midbarios, and can I shecht it? We spoke about grogros, vitzimukim. All these cases are all, what's common to all these cases is ochlin. Mukta, however, divides up into two distinct and fundamentally different categories. There's ochlin and there's kelim, utensils. By the way, just as a sort of like a little bit of a seker, you know, we'll take a how do they call it, a census here. What would be your intuitive sense? Where does the law of books have become more severe, more strict, in the case of ochlin or in the case of kelim? Interesting. It's going to come out that in Kalim, he says, near the Cholokha de Lesley of Shimon Books of the Kalim, he might de Lesley ba Ochlin. Right?
But these guys didn't vote.
I know, they didn't vote. So you cast the how should I say, the decisive ballot by process of abstention. You know what I'm saying? And basically what we're going to have is a possibility of a kula in kalim, that we're going to be more lenient in kalim than we would be in ochlin. Was that your intuition? No.
No.
Now, why would we be more lenient in kalim than we are in ochlin?
Kalim can have different purposes, different uses.
And kalim is something where the heft itself, by definition, is mukhan. Because what is a kli? You know, ochlin, you can say certain things I will eat, certain things I won't eat. The Torah says, Veithidu asasha yaviyu, prepare that which you will eat for Shabbos. But in the case of kelim, what is a kli? A kli, by definition, is functional. That is the opposite of muktzah. Muktzah is something that I can't use. So take, for example, we have something called a kli shemalachto le'isa. And you and I would have said that, you know, what greater hesek hadas could there be than something that's designated to be used for Issa? And yet we're going to see that in the case of Klish and Lachta L'Issa, we have a heter called Litzorech Gufo, Litzorech Makomo, which doesn't exist in the case of Muktzah and Ochel. In other words, once an Ochel is determined to be out of my range, right now it's inedible. Again, the Gemara says in Psile the Tamra, Patse the Tamra, it's not totally inedible. You know, it could be that although these dates were prematurely harvested and they're not ripe, but nevertheless I could eat them. But Grogos and Simukim go through a state in which it'll just, you know, you'll have to be biting your teeth. It's so sour. And therefore, it's not suitable. You could call it an Ochlin from now till doomsday, but it's not something you're going to eat under normal circumstances. But in the case of kelim, once I define something as a kli and I classify it as such, it means that it's functional. And if it's functional, then it's mukhan. Because that's exactly what hachana means. Hachana means it has a function.
So even a drill, I could say I want to use this on Shabbat for some purpose.
Correct. So let's say, for example, this drill is very heavy. You know, it weighs 10 kilo. And you need something to weigh down, you know, your objects because the wind is blowing. So that's called a tzorech gufo. And you're allowed to do that. We don't find such a heter in Ochlin. He says the following, the Gemara Daf Mem Hey. You remember this Gemara. Bo minei reish lakish mir b'yochanan chitim shezoron b'karka ubeitzim shetachas atanagolos ma'u ki lesle rav shimim muktzeichid lo dachye b'yadayim. But heicha, in these cases, the dachye b'yadayim islay muktzo dumaloshna. And the Gemara's conclusion is that this is not considered dachi v'yadayim. We tried to explain because it'll take a while until down the line the chitim will become a non-suitable. They'll become rooted in the ground. However, the Gemara says on daf kufchav dalid amid beis legabe shivrei kelim. So we're talking about something that is broken. Now, you have to keep in mind, which is a little bit counterintuitive from a contemporary reality, that even when a kli breaks back in the time of the Gemara, the pieces, the shards of the kli could be used for various things. Today, in our rich, affluent society, you know, if something breaks, you just get rid of it. So the Gemara has a discussion about something called glima. Glima is an Aramaic word for a beged, for a garment. And the Gemara says, Zarka li ashpa, if he took this glima and he threw it into the rubbish, is the Gemara thinks that it's mutter. It's not muktzah. Mashma. Here we'd have to go through the sugya. I have the Gemara here. Maybe we'll. I'm not sure what the Seder Hayom is going to be this morning because I want to try to finish this essay. But the Gemara seems to imply that everybody agrees that if you throw something into the rubbish and it's a kli or it's a garment, then it's not mukta. Even though he threw it into the rubbish on Erev Shabbos, Mibodyon. That's what Tosus points out over there. Mashma Hasam, the Gam Rabbi Yehuda is Modet Lo'avi Mukta. Rabbi Yehuda, who is the author of Mukta, he is the, you know, the personification of Isur Mukta, agrees that I take a kli and it's damaged, or I have an old garment and I throw it into the rubbish, and it's not books.
But food would be.
And food would be.
You can always use it.
You can always take it out and use it. Nirim Izeh, bottom right. The Choluk Din Achana HaNitzach BiOchlim Din Achana HaNitzach BiKelim. Then when we talk about Achan and Mukta, we have two distinct categories, one for Ochlin and one for Kelim. The Ochlin, Einam Behachefta Dovra Muchan. Ochlin, by definition, are not necessarily Muchan. Some foods you can eat, some foods are not ripe yet. You know, there are various gradations, various, you know, colors on the rainbow. And in many cases, for whatever reason, it's not yet ripe, or it didn't reach the stage that you want. Or you put it away for selling, you know, for marketing and so forth. So then it's not muchan. And with regard to the man in Parshas Peshach, this week's parsha, that's why I want to finish up this article before we get to Parshas Shavua. The Torah says v'ichinu es asher yaviu. Man is an ochel; it's an edible, and yet the Torah requires hachana. According to Rabbi Yehuda, hachana means that you have to actively want to use it. And expect to use it. And therefore, if you're lacking hachana, you put it out of your mind, out of your das, asach hadaite, then it's mukta. So the Gemara goes back and forth. You'll see there on the second line, shin vav tes. Does anybody know what those abbreviations stand for? No. Shin vav tes is shakla vitaria, which means the Gemara. The dialectic, the vacillation in the Gemara, but Gemara im shaych din dechiyah v'yadayim l'gabe ochlin. That it could be possible that when you designate the ochel for something other than achila, then it's mukta. And the Gemara assumes that maybe Rav Shimon would be modeh in the case of dechiyah v'yadayim. That's in what? In ochlin. But the Chiyah B'Yadayim in Kalim, yeah, he took the kli and he threw it into the rubbish pile. Is not Muktzah. Kol Plukta's Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, the entire controversy regarding Muksa between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, that's in the case of Ochlim. How much Hachana do you need? Do you need an active Hachana on the part of the person? Do you need that the Ochel Mitzad Atzmo, the Cheftza is making is Mukha Mitzad Atzmo because it's suitable and it can be edible? Rabbi Yehuda boy, Maisa Hachana Mitzad Agav, Rabbi Shimon Sagi Bikar Hashem Ochel, meaning the Cheftza. If there would be no achana, neither on the part of the gavra nor on the part of the chefza, then even Rav Shimon would agree that there's muks in Ochlin. And the Gemara therefore vacillates back and forth about dechiyah b'yadayim. Maybe dechiyah b'yadayim is enough to remove even the shame achana from the chefza itself. Avol bekelim, please underline this. Avol bekelim, when we get to vessels, nira diyasod dinam loboy bahu. I would add the word maisa hachana. You don't need a maisa hachana with regard to kelim. Why not, Rav Osai?
Because they're always
right. Because what is a kli by definition? It's functional. It's muchad. It's there to be used. Delo nemar din hachana bekelim. The af, even I'll leave it to Rabbi Yehuda, lo be eden achana. The kelim, Rabbi Yehuda, active requires an active achana. That's only vechino sheviu in what? In man, in Ochlin, but not in kelim. And therefore, the Gemara says that even Rabbi Yehuda would admit that if you took your garment and you threw it into the ashpa before Shabbos, it's not muksa. It's muchan. Why? Because you don't need a hachana with regard to kelim. Kelim, by definition, are muchan, as long as they have a function.
But that function doesn't need to be predetermined before Shabbat starts?
Well, I would say, when you say predetermined, I would say it's got to be functional.
Like meaning, my heavy drill, I have to decide that I'm going to use that as a paperweight before Shabbat. No, I can't just decide on Shabbat to use it.
No, I'll tell you why. Because a kli has many, many different functions. You know, you usually use it for function A, and that's why you paid so much money for it, but it has a whole list of functions. The human mind can creatively create a whole array of possible uses for any object, any kli. So that on that list, although maybe I wouldn't tell you there's achana for drilling, because that's an iser binyan, meleches binyan, or makom patish, whatever it might be, but it is muchan as a paperweight, or whatever other possible uses you can get.
If the rabbis didn't want to put a fence, you might actually then use that for a purpose. You got all these kelim devayis,
good. Okay, you're right.
Can I pick up a hammer and a screwdriver? And
that might be, you know, included in what we remember we discussed, the gzera of Nehemiah.
Right.
But leaving out the gzera of Nehemiah, when you're getting down to the fundamentals of mukta, then as long as the kli has a function, it doesn't need hachana.
Would Nehemiah have a problem with me taking a hammer and a screwdriver and opening a can?
No, absolutely not.
My can opener
well,
working?
Again, Nehemiah goes through different stages, but the final stage, you know, first he was very machmir and he prohibited everything except for three kelim. But at the end of the day, when the dust settles, yeah, Nehemiah would accept what's called Letzarech Gufo, Letzarech Makoma. But that's because we're dealing with a whole different kind of category of a gzera de tiltal. But in terms of muks itself, a kli, insofar as it has a function, is considered muchan.
Always muchan.
Right. Ubazeh chal of Torah's mukta. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped a little bit. He says the following. When do we find mukta in kelim? Okay, he says, that's din haktzah chiyuvis, meaning even though we introduced this concept of haktzah chiyuvis in the context of Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't appear on the radar screen of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda says that there was no positive hachana. I don't need haktzah chiyuvis to generate muksa, according to Rabbi Yehuda. But in kelim, the only time that even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that there's muksa in kelim is a case of haktzah chiyuvis. Now, you and I might say, well, what greater haktsach yuvus, what more profound and dramatic haktsach could there be than throwing it into the rubbish? That's what we have to figure out. But in any event, you see that in Kalim, we're not very keen, you know, we're not very eager to assume mukta. So what would be, according to Rabbi Yehuda, two categories of mukta that apply to Kalim because of the haktsach yuvus? Number one would be machmas isur. So when I light the candle, the shemen is mukta machmas isur, and that's called haktsach yuvus. And then we have the case of mukta machmas mius. That's something we left out in yesterday's table. We overlooked that category. And that machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda holds is something called mukta machmas mius in a ner yashan, and Rabbi Shimon denies it. But be that as it may, why does Rabbi Yehuda take a kli and make it into mukta? And the answer is because that's called haktsach yuvus. Either he set it up as a chetzah d'isura by lighting the shemen, or it's old most, it's something that's despicable, and therefore that itself makes it a haktsach yuvus. But zeh chalav toras mukta who nidcha, and it's excluded mi toras hachana v'maisa nasa eino muchan. But Rav Shimon argues with Rav Yehud, and he holds that there's no such thing as haktsah of the gavra as far as Kalim is concerned, and haktsah shala gavra is not meaningful unless you try to be mevatel hachana, like for example the case of dechiyah b'yadayim in ochlin. But when we get to Kalim, you don't need hachana, and therefore the only chal shem muktzah the Kalim would be a haktsah. But the absence of hachana would not be sufficient. But zeh sfir le Reb Shimon dehem mufkayim legamrei b'toras muktzah, that even as far as haktsah sagavra, there's no such thing as haktsah sagavra in Kalim. Now wait a second. We have assumed in the past that even Reb Shimon would agree that there is such a thing as haktsah and mukta in the case of Kalim. For example, what would be a good example? Let's say, for example, mukta machmas chisaron kiss. So let's say a dentist has some very sensitive utensils and tools, or a moel has sensitive utensils and tools. They're very expensive. He doesn't want anyone to get a hold of them and use them for whatever thing. You know, you can take a Ismael shel meal and start cutting your meat. He doesn't want that to be done. So he places it in a designated area, locks it up, and makes sure that no one will get access to it over the course of Shabbos. That's called mukta machmas chisaron kiss. And that's a haktsach yuvus. If that be the case, even Rav Shimon accepts the principle of haktsach yuvus in Kalim, that you can make something into mukta by setting it up and locking it up and then making it inaccessible. So that's what I don't understand here. My second question is, why would Rabbi Yehuda agree that in the case of a kli that he threw it into the rubbish, it's not mukta? After all, that's haktsach yuvus. So there are a couple of glitches here in the system that still have to be ironed out. He says, "Ulam yesh la'ayin." He says, "Let's take a look at the sugya mukta machmas chisaron kiss on daf kuf chav gimel amud aleph. Hakol modim besiche zaire umizore. These are very sensitive weaving tools that he used either to cut the thread or to thread the knots, or to weave, all these weaving tools on mukta on Shabbos. Kevan de kapid alayhu, he doesn't want anyone to use them for anything. They are exclusively designated for weaving purposes. U'miyachid lu makom, and he designates a specific place so it shouldn't be removed from that place and used in any way that could cause him a real serious financial loss. And all these cases are mukta hakol modim. What does it mean, hakol modim? Even Rav Shimon holds it's mukta. So you see that even Rav Shimon holds that there's something called Haktzach Yubis in Kelim. And not only that, the Gemara says on Daf Kuf Nun Zayin, Avol Mukta Machmas Chisar and Kis Afilu Rabbi Shimon Moda. So if you have this expensive object which you don't want to play around with and you put it away, Rabbi Shimon is Moda, that's Mukta. And that contradicts and undermines what we've been assuming here, the principle that we have been formulating here, that according to Rabbi Shimon, Kalim are Mufka from Mukta, and there's no such thing as Haktsa. Even Aktzah Chiyuvis or Dechiyah V'Yadayim in the case of Caleb. And yet in Mokta Machmas Chisar and Kis, Rabbi Shimon is Moda that it's Mokta, and that's Caleb. So now we're up to Kufnun Tes. Now, by way of introduction, let me say the following. Who remembers, I'm quizzing you, the most fundamental, basic case of Mokta? Forget about Rav Shimon, forget about Rabbi Yehuda, just when we had an introduction, an overview to Mukta, what was the...
18 Bavamim.
Exactly. Otherwise known as what? What terminology did we use, if you happen to recall? Mukta, Machmas...
Gufo.
Excellent. Very proud of you, man. He's saving me today. Rav Shimon would not argue with Mukta, Machmas, Gufo. Because Mukta Machmas Gufo means it doesn't fit into any category. It's not Ochel, and it's not Kelim. It's not Ochel because it's a stone or it's dirt. You can't bite into a stone. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu might be able to pull a trick and get water out of a stone, but it's not Kelim because it has no function. Again, unless you designate it as such. But in the absence of any designation, it is functionless. That's Mukta Machmas Gufo, and even Rav Shimon agrees to that Mukta. So all the fighting and the, you know, the infighting and the politicking here between Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon about Mukta is only with regard to Oakland, and maybe in certain cases of Caleb. We'll have to see what happens if he's Machta V'Yadayim Caleb. So Rav Shimon holds that in Caleb it's Mufka from Mukta, because a kli is considered mukhan and there's no haktzah chiyuvis. Unless I can magically classify this kli as what? Nobody's with me? Can you guess what the next move is going to be?
A kli that's normally mukhan, kli that is not being mukhan?
No, what I'm saying is the following. A kli has a function, right? And therefore it's mukhan. And there's no such thing as haktzah chiyuvis according to Rav Shimon to make it into mukta. So we're stuck now with the problem: how is Rav Shimon moda in the case of mukta machmas chisarin kis? Gemara says hakol modim b'mukta machmas chisarin kis. So it must be that a keli, according to Rav Shimon, lends itself to haktzah chiyuvis. But that's antithetical to everything we've been saying. So I introduce here the case of mukta machmas gufo. What would pass, just on a mathematical basis, what equation would save the day for us and allow us to justify why Rav Shimon is moda that there's mukta in the case of a chisar and kis? Can you give me an equation?
He equates those two categories.
Which two?
The last two you mentioned, the gufa and the chisar and kis.
Excellent. The chisar and kis becomes mukta machmas gufa. But that's a problem, because mukta machmas gufa, we said, is neither an ochel nor a Caleb. A Kli, which is Chisar and Kis, is a Kli. After Shabbos, he uses it to do, to do the dental work.
But it's kind of like...
How could I possibly pull off this magical trick?
You remove that functionality on Shabbos. So it's Kelim, it's a kli without a function, so it's not a kli.
But not for a mohel,
exactly.
or someone
yeah.
doing shechita.
Well,
you can still do those things.
Well, there's no shechita on Shab, so
Yom Tov.
Okay, mohel, on Yontif, maybe in a chinami, there would be no isum mukta koin to Shimon in a shechting knife, because, you know, maybe one of these animals from the midbar is going to come rolling in, and Rav Shimon says you're allowed to shecht it, but. As far as Shabbos is concerned, Rav Shimon might be moda that since this shechting knife is so sensitive and so expensive, he puts it away. then as Ben says, that for the course of Shabbos, there is no function, because even though there are many things you can do with a shechita knife, there are many breads and meats that you can slice with, but no, he's not going to allow anyone to go near a shechita knife. I was once present in the city of Budapest, in Hungary, when the Rav tested the knife of the Shochet. The Shochet appears in front of the Rav and on a daily basis, and he has to get a hechsher that his knife is good. And the Rav will take his nail, his thumbnail, and he'll run it up the sharp part of the knife. And if at any point it gets stuck, he sends him back to resharpen the knife. So you don't want to mess around with a shechting knife. This is your occupation, this is your parnasa, your shochet. So you decide that it has only one use. And on Shabbos, it doesn't even have that one use, because you have no possibility of shechting an animal on Shabbos. Comes along Ben, and he's Makadish Kiddushim. And he says that if this knife, during the course of Shabbos, has no function, because all the other functions he excludes because he doesn't want to lose the knife. Dull in the knife. And the function of Shechita, he doesn't have the opportunity, the possibility of doing so because of Shabbos. This becomes like Eitzim Vavonim. It's Muksam Achmas Gufo. In fancy Lomdisha language, that's what's called Hafkas Shem Kli. It no longer has the status of a Kli. Now, is there anywhere in the Shas, in the Talmudic universe, that establishes an analogy between Shem Kli and Mukta? What do I mean? In general, there's one particular area of Shas that's totally dedicated, one subject matter, halachic subject matter, it's totally exclusively dedicated to this issue of Shem Kli. Does anybody know what area of the Torah I have? What?
Second Kalim, the Tumah Torah.
Exactly. Ben is hitting all the Grand Slams. A Kli is Makabel Tumah. If it's not a Kli, it's not Makabel Tumah. So if I want to know whether that definition of a Shem Kli is relevant to Muktzah, because I'm saying now, according to Rav Shimon, there is no books in Kalim, even if he's makta v'bofen chiyuvi. Do I have a basis, a precedent in Shas, to establish the interdependence of mukta and shame kli in Kabbalah's Tumah? And this is what Rav Salvechik wants to pull off here in the first paragraph on page Kuf Nun Tes, a sugya in Shabbos on Daf Pei Gimel Amud Beis.
Can I make a possible guess? If I remove the Kali element of a Kli and it's no longer a Kli, then it no longer accepts Tumah.
Correct. But is there anywhere in Shas where you find the following? Therefore, you know, the three dots, since it cannot be Makabel Tumah because it's no longer Kli, therefore it's not Mukta. Meaning, maybe there are certain standards and definitions of Shem Kli as far as Kabbalah's Tumah is concerned, and there's a whole different set of rules and regulations as far as Mukta is concerned. Is there anywhere in Shas where I can find a precedent of what I call Haba HaTalia, an interdependence that if I want to know what's a Kli as far as Mukta, is Klach Lecha, go study the laws of what's a Kli as far as Kabbalah's Tumah. That's what the Rav finds in a sugya that's tucked away in Shabbos Daf Pei Gimel 83, which is one of those prakim that nobody learns, because all the learning is either in the beginning part of Shabbos, first three prakim, or then you skip over to the sugyas in Klal Gadol on Ayin Gimel, and then you go on to the others. You know, here's Pei Gimel. It's nowhere. He says the following: V'nira bazed the yisod din mukta machmas chisar and kis shall also until tulo mishum to be kevan shu kli hamiyuchad le makom. He designates a place. Why does he designate a place? Why does he lock it up in his closet?
He doesn't want it touched.
Because if somebody moves it, then you know you're going to use it. He doesn't want it to be used, and if he doesn't want it to be moved, don't touch it. Do not touch. Stay off the grass, right? He locks it up in such a way, that's called yichud makom, that no one should take it away. No one should move it. So you now have an immovable kli by designation. I don't mean physically it's not movable, you can move it, but he designates it as such that it should not be moved. Is batel al kain, batel mimenu shame kli. And shame kli means as far as muktz is concerned. It doesn't have a shame kli as far as muktz. Where do I find such a thing? Ke'ein shematzinu din bekli eitz. Okay, as far as Kabbalah's tomb is concerned, there's a special category called kli eitz, wooden kelim. And the Gemara tells us on that pe gimel and beis that when is a kli eitz mekabel tumah, what condition has to be met in order to establish its identity as a shem kli? In the case of a kli eitz for Kabbalah's tumah, be'ina metaltel mole vareka, that you move it around whether it's full or whether it's empty. But the key word is metaltel, it's movable. Umihai taima kli eitz ha'osi l'nachas eino mekabel tumah. If you have a very heavy kli and it's impossible to move it, you know, you could, I guess you could bring a, what do they call it, a crane and a lift, but otherwise without machinery you can't move it, it's so heavy. You bring all the big tough, you know, schlubby guys together, all the macho guys together, you still can't move it. It's not makabel tumah. Hachanami, so too gazru, when they established the Isur Muksa, the Muksa Machmas Chisar Kis came in the cupboard of life after the Muksa, since he's mocked it, he doesn't want anyone to touch it. He puts it away in a specific designated place. Is Enom Omdim Letiltul, these Kalim are not ready for being moved around, meaning he designates it that it shouldn't be moved around. Enolav Shem Kli, it loses its status as a Kli. And Gam Reb Shimon lo poliga Reb Yehuda. Where does Reb Shimon argue with against Reb Yehuda? In Oakland, primarily, and also maybe in a few cases here and there, scattered around in Kalim. But midi achrini. But if it's not neither Kalim nor Oakland, is Modil Rav Yehuda, that's called Muksa Machmas Gufo. How does Rav Soloveitchik know that Rav Shimon accepts the principle or the category of Muksa Machmas Gufo? So that's the sugi we did not learn yet. Kimavuar bim daf mem vavam and aleph. Quote, Ha'ika Torres Kli Aleha. Ha'aleka Torres Kli Aleha. The Gemara says that whether it's Muksa depends upon whether it has a Torres Kli. Which means, does it have the halachic status and identity as a kli? And in the case of Muktzah Machmas Chisar and Kis, says Rav Soloveitchik, because we put it away in a place and he doesn't want it to be moved, it's like the case in Pei Gimel Amid Beis of Kli Eitz Ha'Osui L'Nachas, which means that it's not a metaltel mole v'reikam. If you have a kli that's not metaltel, then it's not a kli. Now again, Rabbosai, this is a special category called kli eitz. There are other kelim which, even if you can't move them, but you might be able to use them in their place. So let's say, for example, we own a sofa that's made of vinyl, I guess what you call vinyl, or some sort of a, you know, plastic, synthetic substance, right? Or classically, you can have a couch that's made of bad, what's that called in English, of
fabrics.
It's not wood, so it doesn't come under the special unique category called kli eitz. It could be that your couch is so heavy that you can't move it. A lot of the heavy furniture that can't be moved is made of wood, but that's not necessarily so. Can anybody think of any examples of very heavy furniture that's not wooden? Maybe some. Most of the closets, I think, are vinyl. You know, it's vinyls. What do you call it? Surrounds the wood. What do you call it?
A safe.
A safe. Excellent. A metal safe that weighs hundreds of kilos. It would take an army of people to move it. It's an Eina Metal. And on the contrary, you want it to be in that place. Wow. I'm just thinking out loud. People are not machmir on that. They put all sorts of things down on the safe.
What's the problem?
Well, we say that there are two Isurim in books. There's Tiltil books and there's Shemush per books. We said, you remember this whole discussion that Shemush per books are like leaning something on a tree might be as chomer as achilas mukta. So if he, you know, he puts his maybe on Erev Shabbos he covers the safe with a tablecloth and he makes it into a table, so it's no longer a safe.
We got the oven. People have these standalone ovens and they use them to put things on top of.
And why do they do so? Because they run out of space, or because it's a very nice table area?
Put their platter on top of the stove.
Oh, so that's all prepared, well prepared before Shabbos. But I'm just wondering if you had a case of a safe where, you know, the safe is hidden behind the closet door, and you want to start, you know, placing, you know, a whole bunch of objects on top of the safe and use it as a table. Maybe that safe is of Eitzim Avonim, and it would need Hachana Erev Shabbos, because in Eitzim Avonim you can't just decide, well, I'm going to use it. I don't think. I mean, if I'm not mistaken,
the safe is normally tucked away, so I'm not too worried about the safe. These stove top ovens, if it's not set up for something on Shabbos, you couldn't just put your drink or a bottle of something on top of that stove there.
Maybe you would not be allowed to do so. It's only because you expect to do so Erev Shabbos.
Right.
Maybe you do it every Shabbos, you know, consistent.
In the kitchen, you know, so right. your chance of using it is right. very high.
Right. But if you had something like a safe, and it's made of metal. So wait a second. We crossed the right a little bit. I think we lost the forest for the trees. In cleats you require metaltil, but in metal you don't require metaltil. So faket. You know, I'm sorry, I messed up with my mathematics here. It's the opposite. In the case of a safe that's made of metal, you have no problem with it. Why? Because the safe is a kli.
Even though you can't move it.
And even though you can't move it, because the halacha metaltil is dafkin kliates. But now we're not talking about a kliates. Kli matefis is different.
So now we're talking about a piano or something made out of wood.
Excellent. Heavy. A heavy piano that's made out of wood. It would take an army of people to move it. Who you two?
You can't then put things on top of it on Shabbos unless you pre-plan to do that.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. Because it lost its status as a kli. Because kliates have to be metal, and it wouldn't be mekabel tum. Now, he says the following. He says, take a look at the Rambam Perek Chavav. Kol kli ha'oreg, all sorts of weaving utensils, mutter. Chutz mi kovet ha'elyon v'kovet ha'tachtom, mipnei she'em tkuim. So there's certain parts of the weaving utensil that are tkuim. Tkuim means they are grounded.
They're fixed.
And the Gemara says, this is the basis of the Rambam, the source of Rambam, lefi she'enom nitolim. They cannot be moved. Rashi says they coved them because they're so heavy. So the machinery they use to weave is very heavy, and it's not movable. Venira, and I guess it's made of wood. That's what I'm wondering. The hakavon of the mikveh shame tkuim b'mkomon and kein ein aleim shame kli klal. Who can gather zed nira to who? called Muktzamach Maschisar and Kiss Al Yedeshim Yachidlu Duchta Batal Minayim Shem Kli. The Yisod Zem Mavuar Yeshem Fire didn't Kli Shem Alach Tolu Isu. Okay, here's your case of a drill. Tehine Kli Shem Alach Tolu Isu Kaimel and Unita Litzorach Gufo Umakomo. Avol Michama Litzel Lo. So you're allowed to move your drill if you need the place or if you need to use the drill for some function.
You don't need to do a shinoi, you can just, no problem.
No problem. Ach, matzinu kli shemalach talisha she'eno nitol klal. Yet we find a sugya on daf lamid vav in certain cases, a category called kli shemalach talisha that you're not allowed to move at all, not even tzok gufo tzok makoma, which means it's real bona fide books to the whole kin kavudel. And that's the case of chatzotzos.
And musical instruments.
Musical instruments, excellent. What is chatzotzos in English?
Trumpets.
Trumpets. Okay, so we're talking about trumpets.
They are poor.
Okay, I'm curious about tefillin. Yeah. What the status of tefillin is. Okay, fine.
I have that problem every Shabbat. But not every Shabbat. But you know, your tefillin stuck in your talus.
Talus, if you didn't take it out.
Do you have to just shake it out, or can you just pull it out?
If you can pull it out, that's the best. Because once you start shaking it, you know, it moves the muktzah. All right, we have to see if tefillin is muktzah. But let's talk about chatzotzos. So Tosus says that there's a case called kina shel tarnagolim, like a chicken coop. And Tosus says that aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, eno nital klal. You're not allowed to move it at all. Meaning not even litzar gufu, litzar makoma. Litzar biru. We have to understand why. If it has the status of a kli, which it certainly does, then it's mufka, it's excluded from mukta, and therefore you'd be allowed to move it with tzok gufu, tzok makom. But you're talking like now, maybe according to what we said above, the kli shemalach to leisa hainu kli sheyesh lo shnei shimushim. What makes it a kli? It has two functions. One function is completely excluded on Shabbos, and the other function is absolutely applicable on Shabbos. It's permissible on Shabbos. Its main function is le'isur, but it has a secondary function, which is mutar. U'mitzad mashu kli shemalach to le'isur harei hu mukta b'Shabbos v'ein lo shimush klal. In other words, if we only had one function, and that was a function of Issa, then it would be Muksa. It has no purpose at all. Batul Minei Shem Kli. It has no function at all on Shabbos, like you said before, Ben. However, since it has another function, going on to the left column, is that Dayan Shem Kli, all of the Miktas. It has a partial Shem Kli for that which is Tafel, that secondary function. Alkein Hu Nital Ben Miktas Legabe Hamalachas Heta Shebol Litzar Gufo Litzar Makoma. Brilliant. He said you're allowed to move it Litzar Gufo Litzar Makoma because then you're using it for a heter, a shimishol heter, and it had that Shem Kli as far as the shimishol heter. And the Shem Kli is Mafkiya Mukta. Avol Kli Shemalach to Leisa Vilvad Lu Yitzur. Let's say you have a case where this Kli is designated for Yitzur and only Yitzur, exclusively for Yitzur. Now again, why is chatzotzos a case where it's exclusively used for Issa? Why can't you use it for any number of other functions?
Well, it's a musical instrument. You play it. That's the only reason you would touch it.
I thought we saw that you could put...
Is it because it's expensive? Or what?
I thought you could put liquids in it and come
right, out. Right, right. So maybe Harvey means to say it's expensive, it's very expensive. I don't know. I don't know enough about trumpets. We have to ask Yehuda, but I don't know, for some reason he called and I didn't answer. I feel very badly.
He's on the phone, I think.
Oh, he is on the phone.
I hope so.
Ah, so who was calling before? Somebody else. In Kain Nimtza, I'm still hoping that Shmuel will show up. He has 3 more minutes. In Kain Nimtza, the B'Shabbos became a Shehu Mukta L'Isuro. Oh, I guess Yehuda heard me talking about him, so he decided to call in. Oh, we have to put him on mute right now. Well, we'll get back to you later, Yehuda. Don't worry, we're not. He says, "In Kain Nimtza de B'Shabbos Mikevan Shu Mukta Lisuro Hu Eino Roy Klal."
You can't use his tool.
Yeah, again, I'm not sure. I know enough about chatzotzos. Valken habile ke muktamach maskufu bottom in a shame cleave habile ke offer vichavonim vi ainle talto klal. When does Rabbi Shimon Matir Ner Zutu Dite Alei Pays Yoshin Mitzapa? Avalhani, the Nefishi Lo, this has a large volume of oil. He's not a Yoshin Mitzapa, Lechora, Mavurm. He said, the Gamma Rabbi Shimon is like Muksa Bekalim. Ah, we're talking about the Ner itself. Forget about the Shemin. The Ner is the receptacle that holds the Shemin, and that's a Kli. So you see that there is Mukta in Kalim. And now we're not talking about an expensive Kli that is Miyachit Lomokom. Some sensitive kli, or maybe chatzotzos, which have no other function. The chol mashem matir of shuvin era dolik b'shav zayim mishum the daiti alei liachas sheyichbe. K'moshu kosev Rashi bezuta the daiti alei b'bod yom sover sheyichla hashemin me'aner v'shtameish b'ner kli sheyichbe, which we call Yosef mitzaper. Avol hani, in these three cases of kos karen dinafishi. Lo asika daitayu sheyichbu kol yom. He doesn't anticipate that it'll go out the whole day. Revur mizel lechora kanal to gam Rabbi Shimon isle muksa bekelim. So it's the fact that you are distinguishing, you're differentiating between a kli, a ner zuta, and these cases of kos karav and nefisha. It seems that there is muksa in kelim. Achen yesh levayis divrei gemara to mitzad kli atzmo ein isur muksa klal. Whoa, that's a little bit dochuk. He's suggesting that the whole discussion is about the shemen, but not about the ner itself. So shemen is not a kli. And the Gemara quotes, "V'atanya mut mosa Hashem shebener v'shebekara osur to bener dizuto lo asacha daiti mine." I die to mine, I die to gam. Al Hashem and Shebener, Mutalo Shtamish, Bain Bener, Ubain Bashem, Shaliach, Shanifa, Kosu Kara, Kim Dasaka, die to mine, Im Kain Mutter, Mosa Hashem, Shebekosa Kara, Sur, Betiltum Shemuksa. What's he saying over here now? He's saying that we're only talking about the Shemen?
I mean, making a distinction between the vessel and the Shemen itself is. I mean, I don't understand it. It's fascinating, but I don't understand it yet.
Let me just read it again. There is zuta de lasika daite mine. Gamal Hashem and Shebener. Gamal Hashem and Shebener. Mutu ol shtamesh bein baner. Ubein Bashem and Avalkos for Karakiv the Asaka Daitaminayum came Mosar Hashemen Shibakos Makara Suma Tiltusha Mukta. Yeah, but what about the coast itself? Tarakli Atmo Ain Lesser Mukta Klal Koni the Mitzad Hashemen Koloshana Brysa. Tanya Mosar Hashem Shebener B'Shebekara Osur. Okay, I don't know. I never thought of such an idea that the Gemara is not discussing the Ner at all. The Ner itself is a Kli, and therefore it's not Mukta. Okay, Rebel. So this is an exciting moment for me because we just finished this entire Siman. It took us 2 hours, but we covered 4 pages here and. We're beginning to see in front of us, I'm not saying that all the problems are solved, but resolved, a clear-cut controversy with 2 opinions, and that of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. And not only that, we're beginning to break down books into its subcategories, and the difference between Oaklin and Kalim as a fundamental distinction. So we'll stop here, Yitz Hashem, and tomorrow we'll either go back to the Gemara, or perhaps... We still didn't finish something that we started weeks ago, and that's the discussion here about Tiltum and Atzad, about Kikarotinok in the case of moving a mess, and in other cases I don't know, did we finish this Siman Nun Aleph? I don't think we did. Regarding Ein Kli Nitol El Dovar Nitol. And if you could look that up in the archives, I don't think we finished up on Siman Nun Aleph. Okay. Sure. All right then?
Sure, thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.